It's not a fluke. It's not a fluke. I said I was coming back, and I actually did. Yay! For momentary consistency. Now that that's out of the way, I'd like to thank you for clicking play. Again, my name's Lucas Sonia, and I'm back in my bag again. Sports, culture, entertainment, all of that. Try to wrap it up for you once a week. On weeks like this one, we not only have an episode coming one day, but a full-length interview the next. NYJ Music joined the program, and it's interesting to see how artists define their art, and you'll hear us go back and forth about hip-hop both in the past and the present. In today's episode, it's all about the Benjamins, baby, and racism. And I kind of had a change of heart about one of my favorite female rappers. Those last three or four words are in total deadpan, but nevertheless, there was a change of heart involved. Let's not waste time. Let's get started. Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it. Can't take it when you die. Uno, dos, tres. If you thought I'd come on here to talk about Odell Beckham's newly guaranteed contract, you'd be wrong. He got the money. Let him have his money. We don't care what you value it as. Just let him have the money. Hope he stays healthy and smart. And hope the Giants contend for a Super Bowl, which isn't very likely this year, whether you like it or not. But no, this discussion revolving around money is for the WNBA. Firstly, I'd like to give a huge thanks to Howard Megdal of High Post Hoops, a fanside site that's really focused on women's basketball, both collegiately and professionally. You should go check it out, and you'll learn something. It's pretty great work. The conversation about player salaries has been hijacked by the internet. Surprise, surprise. But why? Could it be that people have become scholars and sort of done the homework about what valuation of someone's talents is? Of course not. The reason why it's become a topic of discussion is because you have disgruntled former high school athletes that look at professional women athletes and go, nah, you're not worth that much money. You don't really know what you're talking about. Now, before you say that I'm brash and overgeneralizing, I'd like to point out that among the responses that have gone viral about the discussion over revenue sharing in the WNBA, none of them come with context. And all of them say, you don't make as much money, your league that is, doesn't make as much money as the NBA. Why are you tripping? First of all, if you have ever asked for a raise in your life or considered a raise in your life, don't ever bring up this conversation again. Who doesn't want to make more money? Especially when you feel like you're not getting their fair share. Secondly, let's get to the actual point of the conversation, which is not that Skylar Diggins-Smith wants to make LeBron's $140 million a year. That's not what she said. And even if it is what she meant to say, again, who doesn't want to make more money? What she and other WNBA players have been saying is that their collective bargaining agreement does not dish out the same amount of revenue as the NBA. Full stop. So what does that mean for the entire non-nuanced argument of, well, the women should be happy with what they make? First of all, you have to understand the economics of how women's basketball works globally. You see, a lot of these women who are the best players in the world, they go overseas, they live, yes, nice lives because they're making good money professionally, but very different lives. You see, when you live your whole life, at least 8 months of your life overseas and away from home, yes, you have great experiences, you get to see new things, but it's very lonely. You don't take your family with you. The time zones are all jacked up. I just got back from Japan last week, and my body's still adjusting to the time zone. Much less someone who's out there for 6-7 months a year. You don't always speak the language, and you don't always have the lay of the land. And yet, they come back making more than $500,000. More than $500,000. Do you know what the highest salary in the WNBA is for this past season? It scratches $116,000. There will be a link in the description for the High Post Hoops salary database, which honestly is the only database of its type on the internet, because the finances of the WNBA aren't really around as much as personally I would like, because it's worth exploring, it's worth looking into. But if you're going to tell me that being away from home for 6 months of the year is worth nearly $600,000, and then to come home and make less than a sixth of that? I don't think so. Now, I'll be honest with you. I am not a cap analyst. Truth be told, when it comes to numbers, I'm more of a layman than many of you will like to admit about yourselves, that is. But I can do some simple rearrangement and make a logical conclusion. Are you ready? Follow me. The number that's been thrown around often in terms of evaluating how much these women are worth on the court has been the $25 million contract that the league has signed with ESPN. Which means that the league, at bare minimum, takes in $25 million a year. Depending on the team, that's not even adding in to sponsorships. You see the sponsorships all over the jerseys. That's not taking into account gate revenue, because I know some people don't like to admit it. I'm calling all of y'all out today that this is that type of episode. I know not a lot of y'all like to admit it, but people like this sport. Like, people really like this sport. And with good reason. It's good basketball. It's great off-ball movement. Big players make big plays in big moments. If you're upset about the fact that she wears lipstick and can still jump higher than you, you'll be all right. But let's go back to that $25 million number. If you were to divide that number among all 12 teams and allocate that just for salary, that's about $2.1 million per team. Just a little less than $2.1 million. Now, not only is that 100% of the broadcast revenue, but that's also, you know, it's not a great number, but it's a number. Do you know what the current cap of the WNBA is per team? $976,300. The current cap is less than what each team would bring in if that contract was divided equally, which is already nuts. Now, one thing that the WNBA does that literally none of these other professional leagues do when it comes to caps, they are all easily under it. Do you want to know why cap analysts make so much money in the NBA and the NFL? Because nearly every team is over. They still have contracts on the books from years ago, and they're still trying to make up for the room that they'll have in the future. And yet every team is securely under it. Another link I'm going to put in the description is a Forbes article that will better break down how much the top players in the league are worth. That's work and math I have not been able to do, and I will leave it better to the people to do it. But I'm going to leave you with also three sets of numbers. Jonquel Jones, ooh, dang, I hate the Mercury did it to her, but she's been a great person. I'm glad I got to know her at GW. Keep doing your thing, girl. She won the sixth Woman of the Year award in the WNBA. Keep in mind, the top number I gave you for salary was about $117,000. She's still on a rookie contract. She's making 52. These are all numbers that are right on the database. Breanna Stewart, also still on the rookie contract with team options. Man, these contracts, daggone, so team friendly. League MVP, a shade under 57. Diana Taurasi, who was the second best basketball player in the world, don't at me, $115,233. And there is still room under each team. Can you imagine what would happen under my totally uneconomically balanced structure? Diana Taurasi certainly wouldn't be making 115. She'd be making more than that. But I'm going to attribute right to that Forbes article that not only divided up with the gate attendance and all that sort of stuff, it gave a very striking number. As we mentioned, the main issue for WNBA players is that their share of the revenue is not the same as the NBA's. NBA players garnered nearly 50-50. The WNBA, 22%. And if you don't think that's a problem, go get your head examined. I don't see in what world someone could look at those two numbers and say, eh, nothing's wrong. Is the season shorter? Yes. Is the league smaller? Yes. But the WNBA is younger than me. It just got old enough to drink. And for anyone who thinks that the NBA was thriving when it was 21 years old, it wasn't. The NFL was not thriving at 21 years old. It was much closer than the rest of these leagues, but thriving, bit of a stretch. This is still a relatively new frontier, and people are showing interest. The least you could do is respect the effort put in. But nah, y'all ain't got the nuance for that. The nuance, I should say. It's a lot easier for you to hop on 2K and act like you're Steph Curry for about 20 real-time minutes rather than watch DaWanna Bonner and Brittany Griner go to battle with the Sun and grind out a win on the road. I can understand why it would be tough to go to the blacktop and miss a couple free throws while Breanna Stewart, Tina Charles, whomever you want to pull from that team, they can whoop you. You kind of just got to deal with it. And stop hijacking the argument. They should be paid equally. And that's what equal pay means. It does not always mean the same amount of money, but the same share. That's all. And far be it from me to be the most forefront voice on the topic, but I felt like it needed to be said. So please use some nuance. You probably won't, but at least I can ask.
Everybody's seen the tweets, you know what I've said. And I did not expect in that moment that it was going to become what it became.
Everybody who's anybody or nobody has a strong opinion about the self-proclaimed worldwide leader in sports. Frankly, I see the channel as a double-edged sword because no network is ever perfect. And for me, as a black man, seeing a lot of journalists and commentators of color on the channel, and thankfully some that aren't just ex-athletes, is really edifying to me in what could potentially happen. Which is why the news of Jemele Hill agreeing to a buyout is frustrating. But it's not her decision that's frustrating. It's the fact that the worldwide leader could not, at the very bare minimum, defend one of its most valuable pieces. Jemele Hill at the NABJ convention was voted as Journalist of the Year. At bare minimum, amongst her peers, she's regarded as one of the best in her field. And at ESPN, it was no exception. She went from just being a columnist to being on Around the Horn to having two different iterations of her own show. But she told the truth and people got mad. On this platform, I try to avoid politics until it seeps into what I would like to consider sacrosanct. But the truth is, sports and politics have always been combined. If you don't believe this, just go read a Dave Zirin book and turn off whatever bias you have, because the man's been spitting facts for quite a while. But nevertheless, when it came to addressing bare minimum facts about the NFL and its quizzical treatment of those who have an issue with Colin Kaepernick's protest, it really baffled me, because people have been defended for way worse things. Teams will explain away DWIs. We already know NFL teams will sign domestic batterers at the drop of a hat. And networks will go so far to cover their talent's own behinds. But when it came to Jemele using her off time to tell the truth, people got mad. And let's discuss this whole ESPN is left-leaning myth. None of y'all watch ESPN enough to even make such a statement anymore, because the first thing you say is, oh, ESPN's on. It's all liberal garbage. It's another version of MSNBC. I'm only in it for the games. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know whether it is the fact that this protest and the fallout thereof is still national news, and it's still national news because this is very tenuous. I don't know how to address him. Part of me wants to respect him. Part of me doesn't really care. Okay. All right. I think I got it. When the man who sits in the Oval Office, that's the best you're going to get from me. When the man who sits in the Oval Office continues to have the NFL protest and the national anthem on his lips and or his Twitter fingers, sorry, it's still nationally relevant, which means it needs to be covered. The best part about it is she's a columnist. She gets paid to give her opinion, but ESPN could not back her. And that's both baffling and disheartening. Who asks off of a big assignment? Like, seriously, she had it pretty much made. Her own portion of SportsCenter, which we then later found out was handcuffed by producers who wouldn't let her and Michael Smith be themselves, got to a point where she's like, I don't really want to do this anymore. She went to The Undefeated, a site specifically earmarked to talk about the black side of sports, and it still wasn't enough. Rule number one of whatever organization you're with, you got to protect your best player or your best asset. And she's one of them. Because hate her or loved her, whether you hated her or loved her, you listened. She has more patience than I would ever have in responding to people who were less than cordial, to say the least. And the organization showed that, you know what? We don't back you. Your point of view is meaningless. And it's a shame, and it's an affront to this supposed push that ESPN has, or at least they say that diversity is important. And yet, your most talented black female figurehead said, nah, no thanks. I'm good. Get me out of here. Huh. Worldwide leader. Okay. Ms. Hill, wherever you go, people will watch, including me. Thank you for telling the truth, as journalists are supposedly supposed to do. If you've made it this far in the podcast, please give yourself a round of applause. All right, I'm only one guy. I can't really clap like that. Today's interview guest is an old high school friend of mine, NYJ Music, who just dropped his debut single. There's a link to that in the description. And you'll get the full-length interview dropping on Friday. But today, here is a clip of what we talked about. And I opened with, well, you could call it different news, and it'll also be the topic with which I end today's episode. One, Nicki Minaj dropped her latest album. You'll get my thoughts on it later. But listen now, because they will have evolved on the other side of this interview. On my way here, and then my passenger asked me to change the music. No, that's a lie. That's a dead lie. What happened was she told me to give it a chance, and I was like,
ooh, what was it?
It was Nicki Minaj's new album.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard all of it.
I quit after the first. I quit after Barbie Dreams.
I gotta hear a couple bars, or I gotta see some lyrics, because I don't necessarily remember it. Is this the one where she's calling out everybody?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Ooh. So, I just blew into the mic. My bad. No. All right. So, Barbie Dreams. That one is one track that I heard. I go back and forth. Right. Reason why I go back and forth is because, no matter how you feel on Nicki as a person. All right, actually, I'm gonna pull it out right now.
Pull it out, cause I got feelings. All
right, so one thing that we gotta recognize is that Nicki is a femcee, right? She brought out a whole bunch of new women into hip hop. She's the one that broke that gate and brought it through with bars, lyricism, and her connection to Young Money and all that whole thing. She was a femcee that's been running the game for a decent amount of time, even when Remy Ma wasn't doing much and Eve wasn't doing much. Like, credit to them, because I love Remy Ma and Eve. But at the same time, she was the one that, like, rode the charts and brought out, like, what it can be to be a femcee. She uses her platform to talk about feminism. But because she's a woman, there's a decent amount of people, and I'm just saying in general, there's a decent amount of people who don't want to give credit where it's due. Right, I'm not into all of her music, I'm not into all of her tracks, but at the same time, when it comes to Barbie Dreams, I'm just like, that's hip hop, right?
That's now, true. She called out everybody, so that's what it's there for.
Here's when I first heard it, I think my initial reaction wasn't towards her art, my initial reaction was towards her fans. I gotta clarify that. My initial reaction was to everyone going, oh, this is the greatest song on earth.
And people said that?
Well, okay. So what she bridged is that she brought in a new generation. All right. So new generation and old heads have kind of met recently, right? Between the Pusha T and Drake beef. That was a great thing. Whether or not that beef was real, it probably was, because that was, whoo.
You are hiding a child.
Ooh. So they brought old heads and new heads together to listen to what hip hop is like when it's the lyrics count, where people are insulting each other and the words count and there's meaning behind it, right? to a certain degree, you could say that Barbie Dreams is trend hopping on that specific thing. Because I don't know if you noticed, when the Pusha T Drake beef came out, there was a whole bunch of other beefs going on, right? When it happened, it's called clout chasing. And mm-hmm. the game is called clout chasing, right? But this is like a little different, because it's not exactly chasing clout. It's chasing drama, right? But to a certain degree, when it comes to Nicki calling out all those people, if you realize those are all people in her camp, it's not that serious. She even went on Instagram and some other place and was just like, those are all the people I bleep with. It's not that serious, right? Like, if she went after someone she didn't like if she came after...
At Cardi, like, explicitly? Because she did it in the first track, but she did it under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to do that. But if she had called out Cardi on that joint, like, real live Fox 5, that would have been very
interesting. Yo, that's a fight I want to see. Honestly, I would love to see a Cardi B, Nicki Minaj beef. Like, just... I wouldn't even be rooting for nothing. I'll just be like, yeah, just give me the music. Give me all the words. What can y'all throw at each other? What
give me the music.
Like, I want to see what happens. But, like, bar for bar wise, that song is straight bars.
That's
and, like,
fair.
I can appreciate that. As long as I'm not in a space where people are trying to tell me it's better than other certain bars, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm not going to say it's, like, the greatest bars of all time, but it was bar for bar for bar, and that's difficult to do. And then also, if, like, the people that she's calling out and the amount of people she called out.
She went two people a line.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Like, I think she went from, like, Mike Tyson to, no, Wayne was, I don't even know. She called out so many people.
Drake,
it was like
Wayne, designer. The designer one was funny.
That was
funny. That was, like, why'd you come at designer? Like,
she's a child. Well, he's not a child anymore, but still.
Nah, he's not. Tekashi 6ix9ine, she called him out too.
Which is weird, because she then did a song with him.
Yeah,
I get that that's work, but it was also very weak. I have not heard the song, but the lead
you
in.
Have.
No, I have.
Because it's currently, it's blasting on every airway.
Oh, I don't listen much to the radio anymore.
Good. Hey,
I'm not even going to hold you.
You need to do I, honestly. It's like, it's the same. It's radio gets repetitive on certain things, but hey, they have a place that they need to get out. Like, when it comes to radio, I'm learning more and more. Radio has more to do with industry than it does do with content.
Mm-hmm.
Radio has a lot to do with this person needs to get paid their dues. It's like advertising free. So it's like free, not free advertisement. It's like you're paying for advertising. Like, people know what's going to be on the radio, but also to a certain degree, you like, I'm going to presume radio hosts have to keep a certain sound or like genre or a certain energy that they're going to put out in the airways. I remember I was in a cab with this dude. And we changed from one station, and he made the cabbie change to another station, Hot 97. And the reason why he was saying Hot 97 is because the other station always bleeps up on the mood that he's trying to get. He's like, I need to be in a certain mood right now. I can't be, like, guessing with this. So
that's
flip
fair.
That to, like, if
that's
they can
fair.
Keep a certain mood, then, hey, sometimes things have to repeat, you know? Yeah.
that's more than fair. What do you make of the whole Travis Scott number one album thing? Because I heard Travis's album this morning, too. I'm not the biggest Travis fan, but I respect where he has evolved.
Mm.
I respect his impact. And I thought that his album was solid. I wouldn't bop it, but I thought it was solid.
I'm currently in writing mode, so I haven't heard the full album. I might have heard... like maybe a couple songs off of it. And I understand that there's like a whole sales beef. I'll be honest with you. I don't understand it. I'm going to argue that most people don't understand it. The reason why I'll argue why most people don't understand it is because there's conflicting stories from multiple camps where, are we talking about album sales, or are we talking about your merch sales? Are we talking about show scales? What makes someone the top artist or top album?
I think it was a beef over the Billboard number one.
Yeah. What is their criteria for it? If they had a stringent, open and strict criteria, oh sure, we could discuss that, right? And then like it'll be less of a discussion, and it'll be more about like, no, you did this, and this, and you sold this, right? Therefore, this is the person that's top, this is the person that's not. But I think of it, this is, wow, weird analogy. I think of it kind of like school, or education, or a test. It doesn't show how smart you are. It just shows how well you're good at this test, how well you fit the criteria of a test, right? So who's on top Billboard? Does it tell you who's the best album or best artist? No, it tells you who made the most money. And the money, is it coming from sales? Is it like sales of the song? Is it coming from streams of the song? Is it coming from merch? Like, if you think about it, artists nowadays don't make money off of songs, because I don't sell music, right? I don't sell music at all. There's no point, right? If you want to donate or buy my song, I highly appreciate that. That's great. But at the same time, I get that if I don't buy music, I'd be very surprised if you buy music, right?
Right.
Like, it's not that I don't support the artists. It's just that we're in an age where information is so free that, yeah, if your information is so free, why would you pay extra? Unless you're supporting. And if you're supporting, cool. But you know how people like to support a lot? Merch. They like to buy, like, a whole bunch of people had the Chance 3 hat.
Yeah. Right?
Or, like, I'm going to presume with Juice WRLD, he's selling, like, a whole bunch of clothes that's album art and cover art to, like, you know, the album itself. It has more to be, like, what you can wear, or, like when, I believe it was Lil Yachty when he made that deal with Nordstrom.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, when a bunch of artists are on Sprite.
And now on Gap, SZA and Young Metro. See, age of the producer. Metro is on a Gap commercial.
Young, all right, so Metro is kind of like DJ Khaled in that, all right, a little bit different, right? DJ Khaled always made himself a personality.
Always.
Metro is just loved a lot. So, so he's like, he's in, like, and the reason why I say that is that I don't need much to say that he is his own personality. These people made him a personality just because of his taglines, how people tag him on the beat.
If Young Metro don't trust you,
I'm going to shoot you.
Like, wait.
If Young Metro don't want to trust you, I'm going to shoot you. Raindrop. Like, yo, it's just great. Young Metro on that beat. Like, it's, yeah, you make a personality. And, like, a decent amount of sales in the industry is about who is this person that is a celebrity. Who are they as? I'm going to say less a celebrity. I'm going to say who is the person as an influencer, right? Because in the world of creatives, when it comes with money, it goes back way back to your influence. Who do you influence? Are you influencing, like, the masses? Are you influencing a small town? Are you influencing yourself? Like, and it's, oh, I'm going to start tangenting again. I'm like,
go ahead.
But it's a question that I've been talking about recently, right? All right, so this is full tangent warning. Full tangent warning, but we're here. Right?
Go ahead.
So there was a question where basically I had a small discussion with someone where it was basically a lot of venues want to charge artists up-and-coming artists to use their venue to play their music, right? And the argument is, why would you do that? Because you're not choosing the artists off of how good their music is. You're choosing the artists off of how many people they have behind them, right? And, like, people aren't a good number. People aren't a good measure for whether or not something is good, right?
That's true.
Like, we elected Trump. Let's just boom.
Who's we?
I didn't. Well, good point. My bad. America elected Trump.
Right.
Right. The amount of people. Well, yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that something is good. However, I get from a business standpoint that you're not necessarily concerned with what's good, because good is so subjective. You're more concerned about what is your influence like, right? Like, we're in an age where it's not just about the music. Well, okay, it was always about, like, so in hip-hop, it was always about your community, what you're building, and the industry made it stray from that, right? Where now it's like, what's your personality, da-da-da, what's the music like, what are you pushing? But then I also think on it where, no, that's also still your influence, right? Where, like, Jay-Z coined swag. Like, he was pushing swag so hard that he had people saying it. And I'm just like, you just tried to rebrand cool? You think that, like, it was a business move, right? He uses influence to try to recreate culture, right?
And he did it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he did it. So it's like, so now if a business is just like, well, what's your influence like? Like, why would we hire you? So it's, I think of it less on necessarily like money. Like, I see it as wealth, right? Where an influencer has a higher stake in wealth than they would necessarily with money off the bat. Where wealth is something that the potential to create more money or create anything
comes again and again and again.
Exactly. Like, so when Young Metro is, he's a producer, right? But he's also a personality. If Metro came out and was just like, yo, buy this or wear this, people would do it. Why? He's an influencer. And they believe that his brand is reflecting on who he is as a person, or at least how you think he is as a person. Same with any other artist that is out there.
All right, so back to Ms. Minaj. I'm going to be very, very honest. I have always felt that Nicki would be the type to leave a lot of food on her plate. Part of that could be due to my personal rap proclivities. We'll learn about that as we go forth in this journey, I promise. But it was also because, like, she is stupid talented. She is very, very talented, which is why I would listen to some of her work and be like, really? That's it? The funny thing is, it has nothing to do with her being a woman. Because there are a lot of female MCs that I really enjoy, between Young M.A., Rhapsody, a personal favorite of mine, because, man, you should have heard her on Layla's Wisdom. That, eesh. But back to her. She's become a real figurehead, not just because of her alignment with Wayne, Drake, and Young Money, but because she was very audacious. She is who she is, and she doesn't care. And that, at bare minimum, is something to be respected. Now, as you probably heard in the clip, I wasn't the biggest fan of the song I turned off the album with. That's Barbie Dreams. And to be honest, I'm not sure whether or not I will actually pull open that album again, just because it's not really what I go for. But I listened to it again. The punchlines were still funny. Really funny. And just when I thought I knew everything that there was to know, the internet does help with certain things. And the fact of the matter is, that very same Barbie Dream song is an interpolation of a classic by The Notorious B.I.G. Sue me later for not recognizing it right away. Whatever. But she was witty enough to flip it and make it her own. Some of the lines she gave us on this record. Listen. Again, and here's part of the reason why I still have a bit of a beef with Nicki Minaj. There's a song on DJ Khaled's Grateful album called Nobody, features her and Alicia Keys. I love the beat to death. I know the song that it sampled. I know the first song that sampled the song that it sampled. So I was already there mentally. Then Alicia comes in with the hook, and I'm like, okay, maybe something fire is gonna come. And the delivery just kind of felt like, no, that's it? That's what you gave me? Listen to that on your own time. I'm not putting the link to that. But I do feel, based off of that one song, admittedly, that I'm starting to see it now. Truth be told, if you're looking to me for a comprehensive breakdown of Nicki's discography, you're barking up the wrong tree. I've browsed some of the albums. Actually, I've browsed all of the albums. Only a couple songs really stood out. The Nicki verse from Monster is all out legendary. That's the equivalent of hitting a homer on the first pitch of your first mainstream at bat, at least. She's Jason Hayward. Except she's probably sold a lot more records than Jason Hayward ever will. Jason Hayward is also a center fielder for the Chicago Cubs. So if I lost you on that, I lost me too. As we wrap up the show, I do want to take a brief moment to extend my condolences, my love to all those affected by what happened in Jacksonville on Sunday. It truly, truly is a shame. And it's wrong, and it's all preventable. Seems like we're going to keep having this conversation until somebody does something about it, because it's already gotten catastrophic. Now this. Two lives are lost and more are injured. And a room full of people, a community full of people, will never be the same again. My condolences and my love. I don't want to carve out time to too many negative things, but this is something that needed addressing. And I hope and I do pray that y'all can find a way to heal from this in your own time, and that you have the proper support system to finish. Because that's really what makes all the difference in the end. On a slightly lighter note, I know I recorded episode number one in Japan. I'm back home in New York for this one. But with my work schedule, what do? None of your business. I will be traveling quite a bit, but I am taking this show on the road with me. So there may be a tweet. You can follow me at @n_ASONYE or on Instagram @_sometimesjr. And I'll try to give some notice about when I'll be wherever I say I'm going to be. For instance, I'm definitely going to be in Philly this weekend for Made in America, preparing a few things. Hope you stay tuned. I don't want to give too many teasers away, but it'll be interesting to say the least. And then the week after that, I'll be both in Dallas and in San Diego. So if any of this appeals to you, reach out. I'm not afraid. Let's see if we can make something happen. But I do look forward to being able to bring you content that at least distract you, if not edify you. Might just make you mad. But even if it's a hate listen, a listen is still a listen. So thanks for clicking. Thanks for enjoying. We'll be back next week. The bonus interview with NYJ Music will drop on Friday. Full length, unedited. So it'll be very interesting to see how it all turns out. Because it's the first time I've done a dual release in the same week before. So hopefully it works out and we can continue to do it again. And this week's quote to end the episode fittingly comes from the internet and from one of the greatest athletes of our time. Yes, it's a Nike promo video, but the words that preface it are very powerful. If you don't dare to try and chase your dreams, you'll rob yourself the joy of doing it. Don't just dream it. I don't care whether she wrote it or not. Those words carry some power. And take that power with you. Till I see you again next week. Deuces!